And now I'm really excited to welcome our panel up. So please welcome Justin, Regan, Dave, Scott, and Kate to the Inforum stage.
This is a good full house for Valentine's. I guess y'all had nothing else going on? Or... No, it's our great pleasure. You know, if I was going to pick a place to spend my Valentine's Day being a nerd who loves all things made locally, I couldn't have picked a better place. So to have the privilege of being here tonight and kind of hosting our friends and fellow SF Made manufacturers with all of you, I can't think of a better thing to do on a Valentine's Day. So I've been given full license to use as many heart and love schmaltzy metaphors throughout the evening. So I'm going to start with one. If you had to say why your business or why you left your heart in San Francisco, how would you say, why are you here? Why are you here and what do you love about being here?
I guess... Hey, Dina, happy Valentine's. Sorry, we couldn't get sushi.
And you may not know anyone, but this is Justin from Fort Point.
Yeah, Justin from Fort Point. Yeah. Mainly, it's my home, and I love the city and the burritos.
Do you have any particular beer burrito pairings that inform your recipes for your brews?
Yeah, unfortunately, El Farolito doesn't sell craft beer, so... Negra Modelo and a super vegetarian burrito,
but not a particular Fort Point.
Not a particular Fort Point beer.
Really good.
Particular Fort Point beer with Mexican food. I kind of think that our Westfalia has this kind of Negro Modelo quality that I'm really really happy about. So I'd say that one.
All right, and we don't need to go in a line. So whoever feels inspired next. Why is your heart in San Francisco? Why is your business here? Dave.
Well,
this is Dave from Magnolia.
Magnolia's here because I moved here because I was drawn to San Francisco from the East Coast, mostly chasing after the Grateful Dead.
you have something in common with my boyfriend who's in the front row, so you guys can talk later.
Nice. But I stayed because I loved it, and it lived up to my... expectations and my preconceived notions. It exceeded them. This is the early 90s, 1991, so it was a great time to discover the city, and I was at the same time, you know, just kind of doubling down on my passion for brewing and beer and home brewing, and I never thought about doing it anywhere but San Francisco.
Where are you from originally?
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
So that's a town known for its beer. But you came out here anyways... to pursue that.
Yeah. And one of the storylines among many is that even back then it was kind of, you know, it was a craft beer mecca at a time before it really had, that movement had spread everywhere else. So it was really something where I'd see beers starting to make their way to the East Coast that were all made here somewhere in Northern California. And it was a draw.
Well, and I can't resist to kind of then make the connection to Anchor, which I think for many was sort of and is sort of still viewed as the grand dame, the father of a lot of the craft brewing we see here. And Scott, you sort of intentionally in some ways made your way to Anchor and maybe accidentally at the same time. But
yeah, well, when Dave says craft beer mecca, the reason San Francisco is a craft beer mecca is because of Anchor Brewing. And it's... there's that obvious connection that we've been making San Francisco's beer since the 1890s and really before that. For me, personally, I grew up in the Bay Area. I went to college across the Bay. I toured the Anchor Brewery for the first time exactly 30 years ago. And it was, for me, the eye-opener of what a beautiful and magical place a brewery can be. The first time I walked in that brewery and inspired me to become a home brewer and inspired me to go study brewing, I never thought I'd come back and work here. It was just that inspiration that set me off on a certain path, and I went far and wide and came back 3 years ago and came back to Anchor, you know, to return full circle to the place that inspired me. And and why San Francisco, you know, because they make Anchor here. That's why. Because that's what I cared about more than what I was doing at the time. And when I had the opportunity to come back to Anchor, to come make beer at Anchor, it was a unique example of like a lifetime's work culminating in the absolute perfect opportunity at the perfect time, and I jumped at it and I came back here, and I'm so happy to be part of this. And to be part of the lineage is, you know, it's, I don't know how to even describe how special it is. It's just right in the center of it. Every day I walk into that brewery and I'm still as inspired as I was 30 years ago.
How many people have taken a tour of Anchor? So
the rest of you need to be going
on a tour of Anchor.
Well, you're all invited. Yeah, it's not
and
that
they,
hard.
And they book
you, do,
advance,
you do hear that it takes months in advance. I mean, let me tell you, Tuesday morning, 10 a.m., there's never anybody there. There's always like these people get this special tour with Caleb. It, you know, there's like 3-5 people, right? Caleb, you take them up on the brew house floor. Tuesday morning, 10 a.m., book it. Let's do it.
Where's Caleb?
Next week. He's right there.
Oh. So, and I, you know, need to also recognize that SF Made itself is a nonprofit, and all we do is work to help remove impediments for manufacturers just here in San Francisco to grow, and Anchor is our largest manufacturer. So I think not only a leader in craft beer, but really a role model for other makers and manufacturers of all sizes here in the city. Which I guess is a great counterpoint to turn to Reagan. You're one of our younger breweries here in the city, and what inspired you to start and establish your company here in the city?
Yeah, well, you know, I've been here in the city for 20 years, and I think locals here because, you know, having been here for 20 years, just really seeing an evolution. I came here for school back in like 1996 and loved the city right out of the gates. I'm originally from Oregon and just really got sucked in by the culture and just the fact that, you know, when you drive over the bridge or you fly into San Francisco, you're like, oh man, it's awe-inspiring, right? Just, I love the city. And so I've been here ever since, and I think, you know, had kind of a science-y, business-y day job, but always loved homebrewing that I started up when I was living in Oregon. And really felt like maybe about 5 or 6 years ago, met this guy. Well, actually, it was longer ago than that, but actually thought about making beer a business about 5 or 6 years ago. But, you know, really felt like in San Francisco there was an opportunity. There was a lot of brew pubs and there was a lot of production breweries, but there wasn't anything really in between at that time. Now, I mean, there's definitely a lot of what we call a, you know, destination brewery and beer bar, right, where you go to a place and it maybe doesn't feel 100% like a warehousey type of brewery. It feels like kind of a cool place where you go and hang out. And so we felt like there was an opportunity to do something cool in that space, like add to the culture and the background that was currently in the city as far as brewing industry goes. And so really started doing some market research, and we started talking to our neighbors. We took beer homebrew out to Dolores Park under the radar, did feedback forms. Dave knows about this. We were not supposed to be doing it, but at the end of the day, we got feedback forms. We just wanted to find out, did the San Francisco audience and customers, what would be our customers, really want what we had kind of envisioned? And we saw that they did, and we got the feedback that they did. And so we've just, for the last, well, basically we opened our spot about a year and a half ago.
Which is where?
On Bluxome Street. It's a 2-block-long street in South Market. It's a super cool little neighborhood, and you know, what we really feel like we're bringing, what we love of the city, is that we still see every day that enthusiasm that I would feel when I drive over the bridge or fly into the city, of people that love San Francisco and they love, you know, handmade products and just the passion around making, you know, whatever it is, manufacturing, you know, whether it's beer or apparel or Timbuktu bags. bags or whatever. People really love that and appreciate it, and so that's why we're here.
Well, and I think one of the things that we see not only among the breweries but other local manufacturers is this externalization of the craft of making. Mm-hmm. So I think all four of you have found ways to bring your consumer kind of into your production process, and I wonder if you would take 2 minutes. I mean, we have tours at Anchor. Dave, you've just undertaken a pretty major move from really starting as a restaurant in the Hate with a small brewing capacity to, it's almost flipped the other way around now. You're a bigger brewery with a bigger restaurant. What's that transition like? How many people have been to the original Magnolia in the Hate? And how about the new Magnolia in the Dog Patch? So what's that? That's a pretty big kind of flip and emphasis for you guys.
Yeah, it was kind of like learning how to become a completely different business. And I knew that, but I don't think I knew the extent of it. And, you know, you can trace all your steps back and, like, think about how you got where you got and what you did. And in the beginning, it was in the 90s, it was a pretty binary decision typically for a brewery to be, you know, a production brewery or a brew pub. I mean, those were kind of the two paths.
So it was one or the other.
It was, yeah. And as much as I came at it as a brewer and had determined that I was going to make that my craft and kind of my calling, the part that really excited me was, like, well, you could fuse it all together with the whole pub concept. And I had been on some amazing trips to England where I went to visit breweries, but I ended up falling in love with the pub culture, too, and the way they're the social institution. The glue that holds a community together. So I got really into the community aspect of it, and I was drawn to that, and that's why I opened Magnolia as a brew pub, even though I was really mostly focused on the beer. It became our identity for a long time, but it, you know, there was still that other part of me that is like, well, but I'm really into the beer part, and I wanted to keep growing the brewery and growing the beer brand, and so learning how to, you know, be a multi, you know, two restaurant operation with two production facilities and getting into distribution, which is a whole different animal. And you know, I've been around it for almost 30 years, but, you know, you don't really know until you do it. But the thread through all of that is that, you know, the community aspect of beer is the kind of the glue that ties it all together for me. So whether you're bringing people to your brew pub or your restaurant or your tasting room or whatever it is, or whether you're, you know, interacting with people sort of one step removed by, you know, them enjoying your beer somewhere else, it's still like there's this notion that beer is this really community building beverage, you know.
Now, Justin, Fort Point is also one of our younger breweries, but also has been sort of nationally recognized as being one of the faster growing craft breweries. How do you balance sort of being seen as such a fast-growing company, and at the same time, I also understand you all still try to do a lot under your own control, including doing your own distribution. So how do you make that work?
It's definitely, it's kind of one of the values of our company is a very DIY kind of culture mentality. And, you know, we've become the largest self-distributed brewery in San Francisco, and we really like that challenge. We have a lot of fun, like, taking on that problem. And really, I think what that comes from is, essentially what, you know, we have built is a giant erector set for adults. Like, it's funny when something breaks in the brewery, I think a lot of people are like...
And the brewery's in the Presidio?
That's in the Presidio. And when something breaks in the brewery, I think a lot of people are, like, always really surprised that I try to, like, jump in the mix and try to get involved in the repairing of that, because that's the thing about the business that I love the most is that we're building something with our hands and we're making something. And often when the conversation of kind of outsourcing anything kind of comes up, whether it's distribution or HR or something like that, there's always kind of this driving force of, like, us wanting to do it ourselves. And that's really fun and exciting. And when people ask, you know, how big do we want to make Fort Point, because we're growing so quickly, I think a lot of people are always curious, like, is there something you're trying to achieve by growing this quickly? we're going to keep growing while it's fun to grow. Yeah. You know, like, I'm excited about tanks that we're about to get pretty soon. And I'm excited about the floor drains that we're installing right now.
And can we actually see this? Is this similar to Edgar? We can take a tour? Or?
Unfortunately, there's some regulations because we're in the Presidio that we cannot be open to the public. We do have a small tap room in the Ferry Building, which is very busy and fun, and it's a great San Francisco institution to be affiliated with. And we hope that maybe one day that we can get some small kind of public thing going at our brewery in the Presidio, but it really is just a factory and, a giant erector set.
So that's maybe one of the challenges. And just briefly, for those who might not be deeply immersed in brewing, what does it mean to self-distribute? I have visions of, like, people in pedicabs delivering cases of beer. What does that mean? What's the significance of you saying we self-distribute versus not self-distribute?
I think local self-distributes as well, right?
Self-distribute. All right, then. What does it mean to self-distribute versus these guys that, I guess, don't self-distribute? Is that?
No,
you guys used to, probably, at one point as well.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, yeah. I mean, when Fritz bought the company in 1965, he was driving beer around himself. But as we grew...
In a car.
As we grew, we... yes, in a Porsche, I believe. That was Fritz.
Yeah.
But the beer industry, like all of beverage alcohol in America after Prohibition, was set up to be a three-tier system. And there are laws that say if you're over X amount, you must go through the middle tier, which is the distributor. If you're under X amount, you can self-distribute, or you can do it locally. It depends on what market you're in. Every state, every county has different regulations.
Yeah, beer laws. It's super fun.
Beer laws. Well, beverage alcohol laws.
Can you specialize
laws.
In that in college?
Yeah, there are people who specialize in it who help us decipher all of the things that we need to do, because we're in all 50 states, so we're in a totally different game, and we have to go through a middle tier. And because you're local...
Right.
You get to do that without that middle tier, and it's just a different business model.
I will say that we very much don't think it distinguishes like a good brewery from a bad brewery. We're not saying because someone uses a distributor, it's like a notch down by any means. I think what I mean by this is that we like installing large tanks, and we like trucks.
I think you might share that in common with everyone here.
Yeah. So, I love large tanks and trucks, too. And we have both of those things, too. They're fun.
So let me ask you guys. You know, I think someone has said to me that it's almost like the Renaissance we saw in wineries. You know, now we've come to understand that wineries have their terroir from different parts of the country and the world, and that we are experiencing that now with craft brewing and starting to be able to really differentiate between different styles of brewing and different origins of the product that you work with. And at the same time, as a consumer of said product, you know, it can be daunting to even distinguish among all the wonderful brands, even when they're all SF made. So what are the ways that you guys try to distinguish what you're doing? And Reagan, one thing I was curious about was the beer curator.
Yeah.
Is that one of the ways that you sort of distinguish what you can offer your customers?
I think so.
Like, what is it?
So what she's referring to, if you go to our website, one of the things we learned when we went out and had our feedback cards at the park was that people, San Franciscans in particular, like a lot of different types of beer, right? So there's people that want IPAs, they want sours, they want porters, they, you know, everything. And that's, you know, what San Franciscans want, the best of everything, right? And so when we knew that we were going to open up our brewery and beer bar, we knew we were going to have, you know, anywhere from 12 to 16 beers on tap, right? Something for everybody. That's kind of one of the things that we really stand behind. So we do everything from lagers to IPAs to Belgians to sours. And so what we do is we rank every beer on a scale of hoppiness, basically 1 to 10, alcohol 1 to 10, and complexity from 1 to 10. And so when we built, again, kind of from my background coming from business and science, decided to do a beer curator. So when a customer comes in or they're debating on coming into a brewery, into our brewery, they can actually go onto our website, see the live list of all the beers that we have on tap, and say, okay, I want a beer that has – it's 5 on the hoppiness scale, 8 on the alcohol scale, and 3 on the complexity. Complexity meaning it's very subjective, like something like, you know, a Belgian is going to be more complex than a lager, right? And so it'll actually curate a list of the beers that we currently have on tap that you might like. And then you can actually save that profile, and then we can notify you when we brew a beer that matches that profile. So again, kind of blending this, you know, tech and kind of, you know, innovative, you know, concepts around really, at the end of the day, around our customers, making sure that they're finding what they want. A lot of people can get overwhelmed by the choice out there. And so that's one of the things I think that we do that really, connects with customers. I wouldn't say it's a big differentiator. I mean, we're also in South America. We have a lot of people that play on their fucking iPads and you know, computers all the time. So it's just a game. Like, okay, I'm at Adobe around the corner. Do I really want to go down there?
Gamifying your craft beer.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, seriously. And you know, when you come down to it, from a customer and business perspective, it's just a longer period of time that someone's actually engaging and with our brand and learning about what we're doing. And it's a way for us to communicate with them without necessarily having that in-person thing, which obviously we hold in high regard. And it's the best way to communicate with customers is face-to-face. But this is just another way that we can engage with customers. And so, it's something we're super proud of. And we integrate it into our packaging and everything. So when you go to Whole Foods and you see our IPA, you can see how hoppy
it is. And it's a mobile app, right? So we should all
It's actually a mobile site now. Yeah. So that's the other thing. We deliberately made it a mobile site, like a mobile site, not an app, because who fucking wants to download a beer app? So it's just on our website. Yeah.
And we were told that we could drop F-bombs occasionally to test.
Sorry.
So just so you know, Reagan has like taken that
Have
one.
Have I over-allocated?
No. I think we said that you're going to do this, right? Didn't we agree? We were actually told we could do this.
I didn't hear that. See that in the rules. I'm sorry. Sorry.
You're winning.
So
my cutoff.
No, keep going. So from sort of like this marriage of tech and craft, then on the other side, I remember the first time I took a tour of Anchor, you know, Fritz was sort of schooling us in the old craft method and the steam approach to how you guys brew. And then you've had to kind of evolve with the times while holding on to that. And I said I wanted to ask you about the beginnings of Go West and doing hoppier IPA brews, which was a little different from where you guys came from. What was that like?
I think it's a natural evolution of where we came from. If you look at where Fritz took, he bought a brewery that made one style of beer, Anchor Steam Beer, and was making it for like 3 bars. And so he had this wide open panorama of, I'm going to make beer for America. I'm going to make beer that is going to turn this country sideways on beer. And what he did was he built it very slowly and very methodically. And he started with taking steam beer, which was a beer made in San Francisco, a San Francisco style of beer that was only made here, only for here, and grew that very organically. He took Anchor Steam Beer and first made it exactly the way he wanted to do that. And by doing that, he preserved a style. There was a style of beer already called Steam Beer, which is known as California Common, which is San Francisco's own style of beer, born of necessity here in San Francisco and is historically so important to what San Francisco beer is. He took that and he spent literally 8 years before he even began to innovate and make another style of beer, and then he made porter. And then after porter came Liberty Ale. After Liberty Ale came Christmas Ale. But Liberty Ale, when you look at what he did there, Fritz took a style of beer that no one was making in America, a pale ale, a dry hop pale ale, and decided to take a brand new hop out of the Northwest, Pacific Northwest, Cascade Hop, and dry hop his beer, which literally no one was doing, and made a little niche beer here that people in San Francisco liked, and it managed to stay around and managed to grow volume and get shipped outside of San Francisco, and really that's where hoppy beers in America start. If you go back to any one starting point, 1975, 200 years after Paul Revere's ride, Fritz made a commemorative beer in the name of Paul Revere. He made a beer called Liberty Ale here in San Francisco that was dry hopped with the Cascade hop and started dry hopping as a slow movement.
Dry hopping?
Dry hopping.
Valentine's Day, I told you,
Yes. As a slow movement here in Northern California, and other brewers caught on. There was a little brewery in Chico that managed to succeed in making a pale ale that used the Cascade hop miraculously to introduce to a wider audience that method of dry hopping, which led to IPAs, which led to all of the other things that were rediscovered in America and rediscovered with the craft beer revolution. It all started at Anchor. Yet, we kind of kept our heads down and kept making Steam and Porter and Liberty Ale for a long, long time and never made an IPA, a true IPA, until just a couple of years ago. And
Everyone's saying, oh, wow, how different for Anchor to do that.
Yeah,
what you're basically saying is it kind of started with us.
And it came back to all these other IPAs that are much more hop forward, much more aggressive, many more different styles if you go East Coast, West Coast, whatever you want to look at. They're all happening now, and it all traces its roots back to Liberty Ale. For us to make IPAs in a modern style is still difficult. Our breweries, it was built in the 70s. It was built for making a specific style of beer. And for us to adapt has been challenging but fun. And
well, not,
we're
nothing,
getting in the game.
Nothing tastes, no other beer tastes like an Anchor beer. Like when you try the Anchor IPA, there's something about it that I think some critics will be like, there's something they might not necessarily like, but I love it because you're like, this is Anchor beer at the end of the day, and you know it. There's something about it that's like truly unique that I don't find with really any other brewery.
Yeah.
So I promised I would keep this as light as possible, but I do want to ask, since you hinted, Scott, so there are certain challenges one has to do business here in San Francisco. And so one of the challenges for Anchor has been that you have an older factory and an older customized equipment that's specific to the style of beer that you have done up until now. Mm-hmm. You know, Dave, with all of the undertakings that Magnolia has just done, what have been some of the challenges and what have been some of the bright spots in your work to expand your business?
Well, the challenge is just the cost of doing business in San Francisco and the struggles with every step of the process, from permitting and more permitting. there's a lot of that. But you know, it's got its rewards, or we wouldn't do it. You know, and it felt really important to stake another kind of flag in the ground and say, well, no, we were kind of born in the hate of, and this became a San Francisco brand. You know, for this is our 20th year. It's nothing like Anchor, but you know, we put in a chunk of time there, and so it's full of challenges to try to build a bigger brewery and do it in San Francisco. And when we were doing it in 2013, 14, it was very different than it was back in even the 90s when I started it. But it's been worth every one of those challenges because it just feels right. It feels like this organic, natural extension of the brand as I, the vision that I have for the brand. And so, I don't like to complain about it too much because it's I think the pros outweigh the cons. And
I'd like to weigh in on that and say that doing business in San Francisco, while it's expensive and there are hoops that you have to jump through, that every person I've worked with is like on our side. The people who are behind that, they care and they want us to succeed, and they're friendly, they're amenable, they get back to you. It's not like dealing with angry, lifeless bureaucrats. They're really energetic, wonderful people. Everybody that I've dealt with, whether it's with water or with permitting or with anything, and we managed to make things happen. We built a distillery, and we're about to put in a tap room across the street, and we feel the energy of the people who want us to succeed, who ultimately wield the stamp and make things move forward. They want the I's to be dotted and the T's to be crossed, but they want it to happen. They're not looking to us. They're not trying to be obstacles. They just want us to do it right, and so do we.
Reagan, Justin, as newer breweries on the scene, what's been your experience?
I actually don't think it's that hard to do to open a manufacturing business in San Francisco. I kind of think that's a somewhat it's a stereotype in a sense. I talk to brewers at national conferences that have opened small breweries in really small towns in other states. And they're like, oh, I wish I had a city the size of San Francisco to consume my products. So, while their rent might be cheaper, we have a lot of benefits. We have a lot of adventurous customers. We have a thriving food and beverage community that you wouldn't find in some of these other places where cost per square foot might be cheaper. And in San Francisco, it's kind of interesting because we deal with both San Francisco and the federal government because we're in the Presidio, is a pretty easy city to deal with. I think it's a kind of misconception. I've dealt with construction projects in other cities in small, really protected communities in Marin. Those are difficult cities to deal with. San Francisco has quite streamlined processes when it comes to making a business in San Francisco. So it's kind of funny when I hear that. They're like, oh, why would it so? It must have been so hard doing this in San Francisco. And it's like, sure, you have to have the right number of bathrooms and you have to have ADA accessible entrance to your establishment. But those are good things. I kind of think that myth needs to get beat down a little bit.
Yeah. How about you, Megan? What's your experience?
I'll just jump in and say I would love that experience. Mine was not like that at all. I'll say it's not a myth, but it's, I think it also just really depends on the type of business that you're doing. We were trying to, that's, I think, one of the most challenging parts is what neighborhood you're going to be in, what zoning you're looking for, what type, are you going to allow people to come in? Are you serving food? There's just a lot of nuance to it. And I think it can be challenging. I think it can be easier. It's just a real, I think we get a lot of people that will come in and say, hey, you opened up a brewery and what was your experience? And I really want to open one. And I think there's so much nuance to it. There's no real rubric to give somebody on how you can open up a brewery in the city. And I think it's, there is a lot of layers to it. And I think certainly, I think anybody on the panel would agree, if you're going to open up a brewery, you really have to be quite committed to it. It's a long process. Even if it's easy, it's a long process, time is money, especially in the city, going back to one of the things that Dave was saying about it, just the cost of business of being in the city. But I would also agree with Justin. It's a great community here. I mean, there's a reason why it took us, for example, almost 2 years to find a location and almost 2 years to build it And if you've been to our place, it's small. It's not a large facility. But the point is that it takes a long time. The zoning is very limited in the city for manufacturing. And that's actually when I first met Kate, was looking for a location. And SF Made is such a great resource around finding the right types of zoning that allows for light manufacturing. I mean, one of the things I talk a lot about is when people ask about opening up a brewery. So a brew pub, this is kind of in the deets a little bit, but brew pub, for example, like Thirsty Bear or Magnolia's Haight Street location, it's a type 75. So you're predominantly a restaurant. You serve beer, but you can't distribute. You can have a 15 barrel system, so say a system that produces 600 gallons of beer for every batch. We have a smaller system, but we can only be in certain parts of the city because we actually distribute our beer. And so there's little nuances like that. Even though we produce less beer than, say, Thirsty Bear, we can only be in certain parts of the city that allow for a light manufacturing designation. So those little things, because manufacturing entails kegging, bottling, canning, all the things that are traditionally really loud and, you know, not friendly for residential neighborhoods. And so those places that allow those types of manufacturing facilities are really limited in San Francisco, and they're actually dwindling. Well, I don't know. Are they increasing or are they?
They're you know, very slowly. You know, I think it's an interesting conundrum when we think about how to fit more manufacturing into the city. We currently have about 630 manufacturers, if you can believe it. Even I find that like, wow. But it ranges in size from 2-3 person operations in food and beverage or garment or, you know, other kinds of mostly consumer products, up to companies that are on the larger side, including Magnolia, and then up to Anchor. And, you know, part of the challenge is we're just putting everything into 7x7, literally 49 square miles is what we have to work with in the city. And in it, we are trying to fit technology companies and housing and industrial space. So one of the conundrums is what we have done, which other cities actually have been emulating, is we've created pretty strict zoning controls in the industrial parts of the city. What we have left, which are bits and pieces of the south of Market of Soma, parts of Potrero, Dogpatch, Bayview, and it's both protective, but it also means there's not a lot of it. So only the really industrial zone stuff doesn't have to compete with offices and other kinds of housing uses in the same space. So it's, you know, I think that is one of the real challenges. And when we look at the work that we do, you know, it still has to step back to be sort of a regional solution.
Yeah, we're in the process of looking for some space for a distribution center in the Bay Area, and it's kind of been interesting because we've looked at a lot of things on the perimeter of San Francisco, and it's really like a manufacturing space stock issue. It's not really a city of San Francisco or municipality of San Francisco kind of issue. How many square feet is the current Anchor building?
80,000.
Like if you guys wanted to go find an 80,000 square foot building in San Francisco, the rent actually would be cheap. Like that's like the kind of funny thing about it. You just wouldn't find the building where you could have an 80,000 square foot manufacturing facility. So then you end up kind of outside of the city. And it's really about the kind of type of spaces themselves. Actually, as soon as you get above a 30,000 square foot manufacturing facility in the Bay Area, the price per square foot kind of plummets because there's not the manufacturers to take it. So I kind of think people are like, oh, rent's really high, that's why there's not manufacturers in the city. It's like, well, no, we don't have big buildings because we don't have much land.
it's interesting. I think it's sort of, we see both going on. So, you know, we see folks who are trying to get into, and actually it was in the news not long ago, Anchor had been trying to build a second larger brewery
on Pier 48,
and has not been able to pursue that at this time. So I think there's both the conundrum
of...
a
really complex issue there. I mean, the main thing breaks
your heart, right?
Yeah.
Because you want to see...
The main thing with that space is just that it needs seismic upgrades that are beyond the scope of what anybody's willing to pay for.
And that is often the issue with the stock. You know, if you look at, for example, West Oakland, which has a lot of industrial stock still available that is not fully utilized, but it's in such disrepair, many of those warehouse buildings, that it would take such substantial amounts of capital to make them ready that it would be a challenge. But the other piece that I think we all think about is the people who work at our breweries. And you know, we all know about housing costs in the Bay Area and certainly in San Francisco. And, you know, Dave, how have you managed that with your team of people? And you've been hiring people. One of the other things SF Made does is partners with our companies to help them hire sometimes youth and others. So what's that experience like?
That seems to be at a low point in the entire time, in the 20 years that we've been doing this. You know, it's gotten harder and harder. The math doesn't work out very well. Mm-hmm. And the whatever pain points there are in trying to get a business up and running, you know, those become, they just go into the rearview mirror. You deal with them and you're done. But staffing is an everyday thing. And it's always in flux. And, people have to live farther and farther out, commute longer and longer drives, and get up at 5, 4:30. Somebody gets up at 4:30 to come into the brewery, you know?
So they really love the craft.
They love what they do. They love the craft. They love the company and the team. So they're willing to make some insane sacrifices, that's not a normal, you know, like they're, and the pay scale is, you know, we try to be as generous as we can.
I guess it's normal if you live in like the boroughs of New York.
I guess that's true.
In some ways, we're kind of becoming not regionalized and having to have to live in different places, and it's not necessarily.
I just hadn't seen that before. You know, here, in the first 10 or 15 years in business here, everybody lived almost walking distance or a short bus ride from Magnolia Pub. You know, it was just that, I just took that for granted. And then it started to change. And now people are coming in from Far East Bay, and they're motivated to do it, and it's awesome, and I'm grateful for it. But it's a thing that's on everybody's mind, and restaurants as much as breweries, if not more so.
Well, I guess it really speaks to the soul that these companies have, that you guys have, that you are able still to attract people, you know, even in this climate right now. Which, if you look forward on a more aspirational note, like, what would be the one or two things that you're most excited about doing for your individual breweries as you look forward into the future?
I'm really excited because I'm getting 3 more tanks. We talked about tanks. we'll be getting 3 more tanks this Saturday after next, which is exciting. So we talked about the love of tanks and trucks. I don't really have parking for trucks, so I just have one, and I have a lot of tanks, so that's exciting. And I think
trucks and tanks.
Yeah, tanks. Yeah, so we'll be maximizing our space at local, and then our hope is to open up another one. Maybe not in the city, just because of some of the hurdles, but hoping to open up another small brewery that is really North Bay, South Bay, that's really centric on the neighborhood that it's in. So,
I can address that. The thing that we're most excited about is kind of more tanks too.
We have no
new trucks, but tanks. We have 2 buildings. One which is our brewery, and it's an old coffee roastery. It's an Art Deco building built in the 30s. It's a magnificent piece of architecture. We have this warehouse just across the street that is also a very interesting piece of architecture. More mid-century warehouse with a roll-up door that we've used as kind of a staging area and all these other things. We are going to put right across the street from the brewery a pilot brewery and tap room, which is something brand new for Anchor. Yeah. We've had this brewery with tours that everybody believes you can't get into, but you actually can.
Tuesday morning.
Yeah, Wednesdays too. Tomorrow morning, I bet it's wide open. So we have never, like when I came there in 2014, 3 years ago, we didn't have any kind of pilot system because we just made Anchor Steam and a few other brands, and we developed a new brand like once a year, and we just go for it, roll the dice and brew it on the big system. And we didn't really have a pilot brewery. We put in a little tiny pilot brewery that is basically a glorified homebrew kit that we've been using for the last 3 years, but we're going to put in a proper 7-barrel pilot brewery and tasting room right across the street in a space where people can come in and buy a beer and sit down and like experience Anchor in a totally new way.
And when will this be opening?
We're opening in May.
Wow.
So we're
all right.
Like marching forward with this. We're clearing out this warehouse. We bought the brewing equipment. We're gonna do something that is for us a totally new venue and a new opportunity to create and really nurture new beers and new brands and experiment in ways that we haven't been able to in the past and bring people in and share that Anchor experience in a much more face-to-face way.
So speaking of marching forward, I am told it is time to march forward to the lovely microphone that is over here in the corner by the door if people have questions. And let me just... In three sentences, because I want to sort of end this little last piece, Regan and Dave, something that you're both excited about in the future.
Already went.
You've already gone. Yes. Then we've got Justin and Dave.
Oh, something that's interesting at Fort Point is that we, on the manufacturing side of things, we're very much into hiring people who have little or no experience in manufacturing jobs. There's only one employee at our company who's actually brewing beer that's brewed beer at another company before. And we kind of have this internal training program, and the purpose of this program is kind of to make these manufacturing jobs viable within the city of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So we very rarely hire for higher positions within the manufacturing space. We kind of have this entry-level position, and then you move up through the ranks through that. I think Anchor kind of had a very similar thing, or it has a very similar thing.
Yeah,
you start on the packaging line,
exactly how we
and
do.
you move up through the whole process, because it works really well, but also because in San Francisco, it's going to be hard to kind of find those candidates at the higher level position, and it just feels good. So I'm excited about bringing these kind of people through that process.
And how many employees do you guys have now?
We're about 63.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well done. Last word, Dave.
I'm most excited about sharing our beer with more people after 20 years. We're releasing beer in cans this week. And so finally have a packaged beer. And I'm mostly excited about that because it means I can have six packs of Magnolia beer in my fridge at home. But our business model counts on other people also liking it. So.
All right, so with that, we're going to turn to a little lightning round of questions. Try to keep your question succinct and get to the question part.
Sarah from Regrained. It's kind of two quick questions. One, you kind of mentioned this before, but as what can we do as citizens to talk to our lawmakers about how to make your job, as well as homebrewers' lives a lot easier? And for Regan, are there other women-owned breweries that we should be supporting in the city?
Okay. Why don't you take them both for fun?
Okay. So I think a way to make make our jobs easier is drink more of our beer. So drink local applies to everybody. I truly, one of our big sort of things is fresh beer is better beer. So every batch of beer we do is only 20 kegs, and we have a really small distribution radius, and everyone here, the beer is best coming out of a tap from the brewery, no questions. So go to your local, wherever you are, whether you're here.
Drink beer.
And then women-owned breweries in the city. So there are a couple. I believe Sunset Reservoir is a women-owned brew pub. There is, I think, a woman-owned contract brewery, Sufferfest. They do gluten-removed beer. Am I missing anything, guys?
There's some good bigger craft beer.
There's what?
There's some good bigger craft beer, not like local to San Francisco.
Right.
Oh. Yeah. Those are the
New
ones
Belgium.
I know of.
So you should get into it.
Yeah, New Belgium,
yeah.
For sure.
New
oh,
Belgium
yeah, just
Green
in
Blast.
General.
Yeah.
All right, next question.
Two short questions. One, is anybody going to make a gruit so we can taste it? Because we've never done it.
And can you define gruit?
We've been making a gruit since 2000.
Wow.
What's that?
What's it called?
It's called Weekapaw Gruit.
That's great.
And it's what?
It's great.
Thanks. It's on tap now at Magnolia Pub.
Great. All right. Well, second
question. For those of us who live in rather small spaces, as most of us do in San Francisco, is there any interest in creating a place for home brewers like Brew City used to be in the 90s, where they had great sanitation, great kettles, you could come in and buy the materials and make your own beer?
I can take this one. I think there's now a lot more regulatory issues with that, but I'm going to go out and say that I think Bear Bottle has like a home brewer kind of like...
They have like a competition thing.
Yeah. They've got home brewer competitions. Yeah. And you win the competition, you can brew at the brewery type of thing. But there is some issues with just letting the public in and brewing
this
the
beer. This is Bear Bottle in Cortland.
There's a place in Oakland.
Yeah, there is a place in Oakland. I can't remember the name.
Right,
it starts with a W. Woodward or something?
Yeah. Diving Dog.
Diving Dog. All right. Next question.
Hi there. Particularly for local and for Fort Point, I recognize that funding is such an important issue for virtually all startups. And I wonder, how did you fund? Was it self-funded? Was it like venture capital? Are any of the investors sort of pushing you to have some sort of an exit strategy? I recognize that there's an enormous amount of consolidation in the beer industry. InBev is buying like all sorts of good ones. And we'd like you to stay independent and local.
Yeah, great.
We'll let Justin
So I think those acquisitions and mergers that have happened actually help brewery funding right now because they're actually kind of setting price points. But I'm not getting any kind of pressure like that. If that wasn't going on, I think people would have a hard time going, how much is this brewery worth? But for the most part, you know, we started early on with friends and family, and we've been able to kind of like graduate from there. You know, to some more kind of angel style investors. Luckily, because we're so new, luckily because we're like finished our third year, we're starting to be able to get some funding from banks, but it's very hard to get funding from banks when you're a totally new business. I don't think that actually ever happens. You know, they want to give you money when you don't need money. So these
are some of the mergers, like Lagunitas, for example.
Yeah, exactly. Ballast Point, Lagunitas. You know, there's lots of them, but those do actually kind of help the smaller people because it sets a precedent for people investing into this industry.
I guess it's probably a little bit mixed because we know it can help the smaller people have a precedent. And on the other hand, the larger craft breweries are now competing with other craft breweries that have massive backing.
Yeah, there's definitely.
So probably on the other end, I would imagine Anchor, Magnolia.
Yeah, down the road,
have to struggle with
down
that.
The road, there are difficulties that we see because of what has happened around the consolidation of craft beer being bought by the bigger players. And there, remember I described the three-tier system earlier, they have a stranglehold on the three-tier system. There's really two houses. There's the AB house and the Miller Coors house. And you're with one or the other in each area. And they have the craft they're going to sell as mandated by their parent company. And that's not you. And so wherever you are, you're down the food chain significantly because of what they have and what they begin to produce and the synergies that they get and the cost breaks that they get. And then they outprice you and you lose on the shelf.
Yeah, so definitely a lot of tension
and you
on
dwindle.
Both sides.
Yeah, it's an ugly game overall. But... we're going to fight the way we can, and it's like Reagan said, stay local, drink local. Yeah. Drink the beer you know and from people you trust. And if you see something that looks like it may have been made somewhere else, it probably was.
Yeah, but I kind of do think there's an intrinsic problem with that, there's a lot of great beer that's coming from other places. So yep. So while I do appreciate drinking local beer, there's a lot of great beer that could circulate.
Oh, I totally agree with that. Yeah. I mean, it's having beers of the world come to your doorstep is one of the great things about living in a city like this, is that we have everything brought here.
How many breweries? So Dave, you are one of the kind of leads of the SF Craft Brewers Guild. How many SF companies are we looking at now?
We're at 32 now.
So we have quite a few choices. So
in the city, yeah.
So, you know, and I think that's even the philosophy when I think about SF Made. It's not SF made instead of everybody else, but we can dig deep first and then kind of expand out concentrically. So we've got like 28 other brands you can sample before you need to drink outside of the city, the way I look at it. Next question.
So stylistically wise, even if it's not a style you're interested in brewing yourself, do you see any type of beer exploding over the next couple of years in popularity in the way maybe like sours have done over the last couple of years?
Maybe Gruit.
Dave, you gotta help me define Gruit. What's Gruit?
Gruit's an unhopped beer. It's kind of a throwback to an era before hops became the dominant bittering and flavoring agent in beer.
I just keep thinking of chickadees and suet. Totally different.
Totally
right?
Different.
Polyphenol rich IPAs.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's a trend or a fad or hard
or
to tell.
Or an acronym.
I think it's kind of catching on, and a lot of them are really good. I think there's this trend right now of New England style IPAs that's actually coming into California. Cellar Maker, I think, kind of nails some of them like really, really well. And one of the characteristics is that they have so much hops in them that they form these polyphenol chains that create the IPA to be quite hazy. I think that a lot of people have mixed feelings because they're used to like looking at a clear beer and feeling like that's a certain level of perfection, but those beers taste really great. So it's an interesting trend that I kind of feel. I feel like that's a fairly very on trend thing right now.
It's very of the moment. And on the flip side of that, though,
neither of our breweries make those. None of these breweries make those beers.
Not yet. No, and I like to be able to see through my beer usually.
It's like swimming in a pond.
Yeah.
You know, like you don't really want to dip your toe in there if it's like water.
Right. Not sure what's going.
But I would say another trend that seems to be happening is it's. After all these years of craft beer defining itself as an alternative to kind of really light, thin lagers and lighter beers and German beers, German-style beers, for a long time, that was the badge of making craft beer, small batch beer, was sort of like, we're not that. We're like, look how far we can take it the other way with all these high hopping rates and full flavor. It seems like it's finally, people have realized they threw the baby out with the bathwater. It's finally safe to drink, a nice, light, golden a lager, a pilsner, Kolsch. Those are delicious beers. I mean, sometimes that's exactly the kind of beer that you might crave. And like now, there are breweries kind of stepping up. Some, really specifically focused on German style brewing, which is relatively a new resurgence because it's been a lot of ales for the last 20, 30 years.
Well, it also strikes me that there's just more, as a lighter beer drinker myself, there's more ability to pair with food and other things that you maybe are accustomed to do with wine, and we're all kind of learning how to do that as opposed to a more robust brew that you kind of drink on its own. So it seems like there's just a lot more versatility that is coming out as a result of all the innovation. So let's get a couple more questions in. I have time for two more. Two more. You're number one of two.
We have a couple questions that came in from social media that we can make the last two. The first is, this being Valentine's Day, can you remember the very first beer you really fell in love with?
Aww.
And the second one, this being SF Beer Week, do you have any personal hangover cures for us?
All right, last two questions.
I'll take the first beer I ever fell in love with, and I'm sorry to defer to myself, but it's Hankerstein beer, and it's true. I said, I went to college, I went to Cal across the bay, and go Bears, anybody?
Yeah.
There we go. And it was a ritual. In my fraternity, back in the Reagan years, to come and tour the Anchor Brewery, and as a senior, and when I walked in that brewery for the first time and had fresh Ankerstein beer, which I had at like Kipps and Henry's and other places that like. Probably didn't clean their taps all that well back in the 80s. But when I first had that beer in that brewery, it's like, this is a beer. this is what, you know, this is what matters. Nothing else matters. I got a psychology, you know, midterm in a week and a paper to write and some other bullshit going on. Got to get my car out of it. Got towed for parking tickets. Whatever. I don't care. Anchor. But it was this beer, this Anchor Steam beer, this is what matters. And I totally fell in love with that beer. And I'm still in love with it.
How about the rest of you guys?
I think my dad told me to never fall in love with a beer. I've had a couple one-night stands. I'd say Anchor Christmas was actually one of, you know, a beer that I've always looked forward to having. And then Augustiner Helles is the other one.
Megan?
Deschutes Black Butte Porter.
All right. Down to you.
Scott touched on the sense of place and a lot of the other outside factors that kind of play upon any kind of favorite food memory or beverage memory. And I drank a lot of Sierra Pale and Grateful Dead parking lots. And I have very fond, just long time now relationship with every. Sometimes I crave a Sierra Pale and I'll just go grab one, and that brings back a lot of memories.
Well, I'm going to answer this question myself and then ask us the final question. But for me, it's been a lifetime of pursuing something other than Utica Club, which growing up in Buffalo, New York, you could get for like $5.99 a case. And I, as I have grown and moved out here, I have discovered far greater pinnacles of wonderfulness in beer than Utica Club. But that was sort of my starting point, and kind of everything is better from there. So last question, speaking of better from here, you each get a 60-second idea to make the world a better place.
Starting with
just
you.
Just a small little thing, because this is
starts
a tradition
with Dave.
Of how
yeah,
we
Dave,
close.
Dave, take
course.
That way. Come
ready,
this way.
Go.
You know, I'm going to keep it to the beer world.
Good.
Kind of keep it focused, because there's a lot of things we could talk about. There's a lot of the gamification going on. It's a lot of, like, you know, how many different beers have you tried? And there's a lot of, like, pressure, you know, from brewers themselves as well as people out there to always make new beers and a new beer every time they have a beer. It should be something new that they haven't had. And, you know, I got a text from a friend who was at Tornado in the Lower Haight, and he had tried a beer that's like a classic beer, and he's like, oh, I just had this. Should I have this or this next? And I was like, well, just have another one of those, you know? Like, you know that's good. You loved it. It's great. Like, why do you feel compelled to, like, then have another one and just check another box? I go, then I tried this. And so I just feel like it'd be nice to remember that, like, there's a, you know, you form relationships with beers and beer brands, and it's more than just, I tried this, and now I'm going to try another five things. A lot of it's just remembering that there's this social kind of democratic aspect to beer that we, you know, it's a community building thing, and we come around it together and clink glasses and share pints, and like just remembering that beer is just this great thing to drink sometimes, and you don't have to unlock a badge or check something off. Then that's it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to, just being right smack dab in the middle of SF Beer Week, I have nothing profound here other than the two things that I'm dealing with right now is the fact that I have to lug these fucking kegs. And I know that's my last F-ball to every event.
Well done.
Thank you. I have to lug these kegs to every event because I have a real small team. So it's me and one other person. You know, calling on the Amazon people to use their drones to drop kegs. And the second part of that is, for the middle of SF Beer Week, is for someone to invent a way to suck the calories out of beer. Take them away. Keep the flavor. Just take the calories away.
They did. It's called Michelob Ultra.
No, keep the flavor. I said keep the flavor. That's the tricky part.
They missed that part. All right. For me, when I heard this question, I knew exactly what I wanted to say, and I'm like, yeah, damn it, I'm not going to get political. I'm not going to do it. But yeah, here it is. Here it is, people. And it's when I look at the whole world and who needs to lead what's going on in the world, I think it's right here in San Francisco. California first, San Francisco before that. So I'm going to tell you that as Californians, we need to support our viewpoint of what's right. And it's California. That's who you are. That's who this room is. You're the California Commonwealth. Whatever you believe in what's right as Californians. And just do that. All right?
All right.
That's it.
Ideas no change the world. I think people should and parents shouldn't encourage their children or force their children to try food that they don't normally try. I actually think that the food is this fairly amazing cultural conduit by which, you know, really people can learn a lot more about other cultures here in San Francisco. Like, we kind of have access to everything. So, you know, eat food you don't normally eat.
drink beer you don't normally drink. So on that, we will be standing up for those of you who wish to hang out and get the party started. And we're going to move the chairs out. And we have samples from all of these wonderful breweries. And thank you for joining us.